Welcome back to the Mittner Method. I'm your host, Andrew Mittner, and on today's episode, we're going to look at our predictions for the Heisman candidates this year. Now, as in years past, the Heisman Trophy has been a pretty much kind of like a puzzle that people are always struggling with to pick preseason. And so my best way of looking at it is to kind of lean into the narrative of why someone should win versus, that being as important as the player's actual statistics. And I know a lot of people don't believe that, but it really is the truth. So in the last 22 years, we have had three running backs, Reggie Bush, Mark Ingram, and Derrick Henry, one wide receiver, Devontae Smith, and 18 quarterbacks raise the trophy. Now, those running backs were on championship contenders. They were also arguably the best player on their team, and at those exact times were putting up outlier-type statistical seasons. Now, Devontae Smith had an incredible season when he won, and he also had some very fortuitous luck on his side. He was widely seen as a better player than his quarterback, Mac Jones, as that has, came to fruition in the NFL also. And Jalen Waddle got hurt and went down early. So what ended up happening is he had a NCAA leading 145 targets that year. Now, that was 24 more than the next closest receiver. So those are really the outliers in the last, 22 years. Now the landscape has really changed, and you don't really see wide receivers and running backs considered in the Heisman Trophy Award. Not like they used to be, they would be littered in the top 10 in odds. And, sometimes they would even be top five, but that's not really the case. And I think the market has finally caught up with that. And it's really, understanding of what it takes to win the award and what, the stipulations are. To give you an example, the closest non-quarterback in odds is Travis Hunter at 50-1. And even that is pretty much a reach. And the reason being is if Colorado is going to be, playoff bound or competing, it's going to be because of Shedeur Sanders, more than likely. He's going to have some, transcendent numbers. So what I've done is I've kind of put together a criteria to win the modern-day Heisman. And now these aren't hard, fast rules, but the majority of the winners are going to check almost all of these boxes. All right, first things first, you need to be a quarterback. And, secondly, you need to play for a playoff contender. Now, being that the playoff has expanded, this actually is going to expand the pool of potential finalists and things like that. Because normally, you're going to have to be in the top four and you're going to have, great statistics, right? Well, now that the playoff has expanded, more players are going to get more consideration, right? And so the third thing is you need to have an opportunity to have Heisman moments, in big games, things that are going to be memorable to, the casual fan, not just someone who is, a box score, analyst who's just going to look at the numbers, right? But on top of all of that, you need to also produce transcendent numbers. They have to, jump off the page. And a great example is last year, even though Michael Penix led Washington to an undefeated season and, they were going to make the playoff, Jaden Daniels just had unbelievable statistics. And they won 9 games at LSU, even though they underachieved their expectations for the year. But his numbers were just transcendent. So you have to also produce these transcendent numbers. And one thing, the last two things kind of really make a big point. As a quarterback, you have to be mobile to some extent. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be Jaden Daniels, but when quarterbacks like that come along and they rush for over 1,000 yards and they also play on competitive teams and they have these transcendent numbers and they have these Heisman moments, like, they just stand out. You know, there's just no way you can, like, measure that to a pocket passer, right? And then lastly, not to be the preseason favorite. Now, this year, even though the preseason favorite is Dylan Gabriel, he is still, like, plus 750. So that would be, like, the third favorite when, like, Caleb Williams won it all 2 years ago. So, like, that's kind of maybe something that we avoid going forward. But the reason being is when you're a Heisman favorite, the expectations are already sky high. And so having just a good season is not going to be good enough. And that's why only one favorite has ever won the Heisman in the modern era, and that was Marcus Mariota. Now, we don't have any obviously chance for a repeat Heisman, but, you know, because Jaden Daniels is in the NFL now, but that would also be something you lean into for the future, right? You're not really going to be taking somebody to repeat. And the reason being is you have a lot of players who actually had better statistical seasons in non-Heisman seasons, like Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow, Lamar Jackson, right? So, and then this part, you know, you have to be on a playoff team. I believe now that there's 12 teams. It used to be in the past that you can compete like Jaden Daniels did last year, Lamar Jackson, Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin III. They had incredible, memorable seasons that fit the narrative. But all of those teams would have been in the 12-team playoffs. So, like, that's kind of like, you know, part of it now. Like, you have to play on a team that's going to compete for the playoffs. And other than that, you know, that's pretty much it. And we're going to look at three quarterbacks today that I feel will give you an opportunity and bridge the gap in certain areas that I feel are being overlooked. So first quarterback on the docket is going to be Jalen Milroe. And he is plus 1,400 to win the Heisman. And that is the fifth overall odds. So the main thing here is looking at this from an analytical standpoint is even though like Jalen Milroe and Alabama, you know, are losing Nick Saban, you know, obviously the greatest coach of all time. Pains me to say that even as a Notre Dame fan, but it is a fact. Even though that is going to be viewed as a downgrade, he's getting a gigantic upgrade from the offensive standpoint with Kalen DeBoer and that Washington staff coming in. They are going to inject modern tendencies and modern offensive philosophies that Alabama has been looking for decades. And as stated much before, Tommy Rees is just not that guy. He was not that guy last year. And that just even more showed itself in the Michigan game when you feel like they were talented enough to win that game for sure. So the things that really stand out for Milroe is they are just going to pass the ball an infinite amount of more times. And so even though his statistics last year are very promising, you know, he had 2,800 passing yards, 23 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and 531 rushing yards and 12 rushing touchdowns. He is going to see just a gigantic amount of volume increase. To put it in perspective, Milroe attempted 21.8 passes per game last year. That is near the bottom in attempts per game when it comes to, like, modern college offenses. In retrospect, Michael Penix for Washington averaged 37 pass attempts a game. So even if that falls somewhere in the middle and, you know, it doesn't go all the way up to 37 attempts a game, you are still looking at a huge increase in volume. So that 2,800 yards passing is now going to be pushing probably 3,500 to, you know, maybe even 4,000 passing yards if everything, you know, breaks correctly. And this on top of, you know, the increase in volume, you're going to see more 11 personnel, more, you know, more modern style offense, right? And so that is only going to improve Milroe. And on top of this type of spacing that they're going to have on offense, Washington and Kalen DeBauer know how to protect a quarterback. And they're going to put him in better positions overall. And he's going to, you know, probably be shocked in the difference between this offense and a Tommy Rees offense. And because of that, he has the potential, you know, playing at Alabama, you know, their win total is 9.5. And so they're going to look to make the playoffs. You know, I'm not saying they will because they do have some negative regression stats on their side, but there will be plenty of opportunity for Heisman moments as they will play, you know, a decent schedule. It's pretty, it's going to be pretty tough, and you'll see that they, you know, they're going to have to come up big in certain areas, but in reality, you know, they have the talent and they have the coaching staff. And because of that, you know, I can't count either of them out, right? I can't count the team and I can't count Milroe out. I feel like he is going underlooked and should realistically be more of a, I would say like a 10-to-1-ish type, you know, he should be top three in my opinion when it comes to odds. And, you know, they'll get Georgia at home, Tennessee on the road, LSU on the road. So it is a tough schedule, mind you. It is a very tough schedule. But if they go 10-2 or even 11-1 will be a stretch. I do not see that happening. But if they have the chance to make the SEC championship game or, you know, make the playoff, he is going to be a finalist with the statistics that he will put up for the Heisman. So our next quarterback is going to be at Tennessee, and it's going to be – I want to make sure I get this right so I don't want to butcher it. It will be Nico – look him up to pronounce him. Iamaleav. If I butchered that, I apologize. He is going to be coming in and taking over the Josh Heupel offense. He did not have, you know, a lot of attempts last year. You know, that's, you know, because Joe Milton played the vast majority of the season. So we do not have, you know, this sample size to go off of, right? But the thing is, I am just a full believer in the prospect profile. He's the second-rated quarterback in his class of 2023 at 247 Sports, and the only one ahead of him is Arch Manning. So I think when I look at him from the perspective, you know, he's 6'6", 225, like there's just glowing reports of him. Obviously, on 247 Sports, his biggest comp is Justin Herbert. Now, I'm not going to go that far. I'm not a scouting expert or anything like that. That's not my job, you know, but the report is showing that. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be Justin Herbert, but he is highly touted and that does matter. And so I believe that in this Josh Heupel offense, which is geared towards making it easy for the quarterback, as we have saw that with Hendon Hooker, with Joe Milton, you know, it is a very quarterback friendly offense. And it is meant to put up numbers, and it is meant to give you these gaudy statistics. And when I say gaudy, I do mean that, because you're not throwing into, you know, these real tight windows. You're not expected to read, you know, defenses, you know, and in a way that a pro style offense would make you, right? And this type of offense literally is built to manipulate the size and the hash marks in the college game. So to give you a little backstory, you know, we look at 2021, Hendon Hooker goes 2,945 yards for, 31 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Now, that's not good enough to win the Heisman. Do not get me wrong. That is not even close to good enough. But the touchdown numbers and the efficiency from, like, you know, not throwing a ton of interceptions, that stands out to me. Now, Hooker only averaged 23 attempts per game. And Tennessee last year, they averaged 31.5 attempts per game, which is pretty much middle of the road when it comes to college football. But because of the hyper-efficiency of the offense, he will have the potential to put up, you know, 3,500 to 4,000 passing yards. And it's going to probably need to be more near the top, like 4,000, right? Simply because he's not going to be, you know, running like Jalen Milrow or like Jaden Daniels was last year. That's not part of his game. He's not going to be doing that. So he's going to have to really stand out in the passing numbers and, you know, the touchdown interception ratio and all of that. And I think Tennessee, you know, they play a very, I don't want to say like super soft schedule, but it's very manageable. And if they can get to 10 wins, 11 wins, they're going to be in the playoff conversation. And a lot of these games that are going to be tougher, they will have the advantage and be playing at home. Like, so they do have Alabama at home, they have Georgia on the road, and then they have Oklahoma on the road. So now they're going to have to win 2 of those 3, and Georgia's probably not on the table because, you know, they're, as of right now, 16.5 point underdogs to Georgia on November 16th. But if they can win the other games that they have scheduled, and, you know, against Oklahoma and Alabama, you know, they could very well be, you know, trying to compete for an SEC championship. And if they are competing like they were before, it's going to be because of the quarterback play, and he will have, you know, video game gaudy-like numbers. And that is something that really sticks out to the casual fan. When you're at a bar or you're with your friends who, you know, do not watch football with a critical eye, but they're like, oh, I just saw this stat on ESPN, and he said such and such and such. That's going to stand out. That's going to be the type of things that really stand out. And that's going to be the type of statistics that, you know, is going to be put up in that type of offense. And his odds right now are actually just a little bit more higher than Jalen Milrow's. They're plus 1,500. But again, we are looking for players with a path to the Heisman. And the narrative matters just as much. Do not get it twisted. Okay, if Nico Iamaleva leads Tennessee to the playoffs and puts up gaudy numbers, that's going to be weighed more than if Carson Beck and Georgia goes undefeated. It just is. You know, you're trying to paint a picture when it comes to things like this, and anyone who is trying to tell you otherwise, they're just A, not thinking outside the box, and B, they're just fucking wrong. And that's just it. There's no other way around it. So narrative-wise, he will check all the boxes if things fall into place. Now, the last quarterback on our list is going to be more of a long shot, and it is a polarizing pick, and I will probably get some, you know, flack and some pushback on this, but it is Shedeur Sanders at Colorado. Now, he is plus 3,500, and that is one of our longer shots on the board that I feel comfortable with. And the reason I feel comfortable making this pick is, you know, Colorado, regardless of how you feel about the team last year and how hyped up they were and how they won, you know, their first three games and then lost, you know, their next. Then they lost, you know, 8 of 9. You know, however you feel about that is fine. You know, and rightfully so. They feel overhyped. But they are going to have some regression stats coming their way. You know, they're 3-5 in 1 score games last year. That's going to come back their way. And even though their strength of schedule is still tough, because it will be, it is not nearly what they had to face last year when they had to go to Oregon, when they played Arizona, when they had to go to UCLA, they played Utah, Oregon State. Like the Pac-12 last year, I think a lot of people are going to forget, but I'm not going to let you forget. That conference was completely brutal. And I mean, they had so much talent and, in my opinion, was the best conference in college football by far. From top to bottom. Not saying like they had the best teams, because obviously, you know, Washington didn't win it all. But from top to bottom, depth-wise, that was the hardest conference. So when I look at a path for Shedeur Sanders, the statistics are going to be there. He attempted 39 passes per game last year. Now, obviously, I know that is inflated because they were losing and behind in the majority of those games. But that, I mean, they are still leaning into him as their leader. That is how they are going to win games, and it's going to be through the air. Do not get it twisted. They're not turning into Iowa, you know, student body left, student body right, and that's it. That, you know, that's what this is going to be. From a statistical standpoint, you know, he had 3,230 passing yards, 27 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Now, I know what the vast majority of everybody is going to say is like, oh, yes, he took a lot of sacks. You know, he did not look good in certain areas. And I get all that. That is totally real. Colorado, you know, for better or worse, replaced the entire offensive line with transfers. It's 100% returning production via the transfer portal. Now, I know that is not what you're looking for continuity-wise, but you are getting Division I production from those offensive linemen. So that production does count, and it is, you know, for better or worse, you know, production that you should lean on and bank on. And secondly, there is no way that that offensive line can be worse. You know, everything points to going up. Even if it's just a incremental or mediocre rise on the offensive line, that will produce gigantic dividends. Now, the other thing is Colorado's returning production is 4th in offensive returning production and 1st in defensive returning production. Now, they got rid of their coordinator. They bring in a new coordinator trying to, you know, solidify the defensive side of the ball to make the games more competitive, which I totally agree with. And, I mean, they're going to have to get a lot of things right. But I'm telling you right now, if Colorado is even close to making the playoffs and they would have to, you know, win 9 or 10 games, and, you know, right now they are slated at 5.5 as their team total. That would be, you know, that would be a big increase, obviously. But he is going to fit the narrative. He has the name recognition. He will have the statistics. And there will not be a better story at that point. Because everybody in every single bar or group is like, they're shitting on Colorado. Like, they're tired of it. You know, it's only been 1 year. They're tired of hearing about it. Yeah, and I get that. You know, like, it can be annoying and it can fatigue you. But in reality, if they're able to continue this trend of turning, you know, turning around the program, that matters. As much as people don't want it to, it does matter. And at 35-1, like, that is solid value. Well, that is going to be it for the quarterbacks listed for the Heisman today. I do not have any reason to think any running back or skill position player is going to break through and, you know, shock the world this year. And I could be wrong. Obviously, I've been wrong many times before. But the thing is, this is bad process. This is quarterbacks. This is a quarterback award for better or worse. And so you should approach it as such. So that'll be all I have for this episode. As always, if you have any questions or suggestions about the process or data, or, you have, a suggestion for an episode topic, feel free to always reach out to me on Twitter, or you can email me at themittnermethod@gmail.com. I am open to, any type of suggestion. I want to talk about things that people want to listen about. And, that's what's important to me. I want to share my knowledge and my analysis to people who want to listen to it. And so we do have numerous other topics that we're going to touch base on in the upcoming weeks. We've done all the previews. I'm going to dive into there's a lot of different parlay popper opportunities for futures that a lot of people I think are overlooking or just not maybe aware of in all reality. So we have that. We're going to have maybe another touch base on a couple coordinator changes that really stand out that, most people wouldn't be thinking about. And yeah, then that's going to be pretty much it, guys. So again, as always, thank you for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one. Take care.